Star Walker Studios presents Game Master's Journey, a podcast all about tabletop role-playing games from the perspective of the captain's chair. Greetings, gamer, and welcome to Game Master's Journey, a podcast all about tabletop role-playing games from the perspective of the captain's chair. I'm your host, Lex Starwalker. Today, I will tell you a bit about myself and my history with role-playing games. So join me on the journey. Together, we can become game masters truly worthy of the title. Hello, listener and fellow GM and or player. Welcome to the second episode of Game Master's Journey. I'm Lex Starwalker, and I am transmitting this message from the Obsidian Monolith somewhere outside of time and space. So last episode, I told you all about what I'm planning to do with this show, how this show is the spiritual successor of my GM Intrusions podcast, how you can just think of this as season three of GM Intrusions, even though this is its own brand new podcast to welcome players and GMs of all tabletop role-playing games. This is a, if you will, generic podcast where we will talk about topics that are applicable to any role-playing game that you are playing and or running. So if you have any interest in tabletop RPGs, this show is for you. So today, what I'm going to do is I am going to talk about myself. I'm going to be a little narcissistic today, and I'm going to tell you about me so that you can know who I am and where I'm coming from. I'm not going to tell you my life story. Rather, what I'm going to do is focus on my history with tabletop RPGs. And this was something I did for the first episode of GM Intrusions. And at the time, it was kind of like my episode zero. It was just, you know, a way to kind of get into the swing of podcasting and get a feel for things and all of that. And I wasn't even sure when I recorded it if I would actually release it. And then I finally did because I'd put so much time into it. I was like, well, I might as well release this, right? But I didn't think it was a great episode, and I was really concerned how it would be received. Very much to my surprise, it is one of the favorite episodes of a lot of people. I hear so many people when they contact me for the first time, they talk about that first episode and how they really enjoyed kind of learning where I'm coming from. It helped them feel like they know me as a person so that, you know, when I'm talking about whatever, you kind of know what my perspective is. And also, I found out that a lot of you have had very similar experiences to mine. And so it helped, you know, to identify with me as host and say, oh, wow, we have all these things in common as far as our journey into and through the world of role-playing games. So I first found out about role-playing games when I was in high school. I believe it was when I was a freshman. In fact, I'm pretty sure it was when I was a freshman. And I kind of had a, I don't know if it's unique, but a situation that not everybody has, where I grew up in rural Indiana, we had two different sets of elementary and middle schools that then came together during high school. So I remember very well, you know, my first week of high school, it was like half the people in my grade were people I'd never met before. There were a few of them that I had encountered in band, because the bands sometimes got together to do things before high school. But most of the people, they were totally new people. And so it was this kind of weird situation where you had like your class divided in half, and you know, one half knew their half really well, but then didn't know the other half very well. So it was kind of this weird time of meeting new people and making new friends, while at the same time being surrounded by people that you'd known for years. And it was during that time that I first got exposed to role-playing games. My first exposure was someone in one of my classes had the second edition D&D Player's Handbook and was looking at that. And I was a avid reader. I always have been. I was a kid that would read books on the school bus and get made fun of for it. So I was really interested in what this person was looking at, and I don't even remember who it was. So I was like, hey, you know, what are you looking at? And he was like, well, this is for this role-playing game. And I'd heard of Dungeons & Dragons. I'd watched the cartoon. This was during the early 90s, so this was during a time when there was all these ridiculous stories about people worshiping the devil and playing D&D and all this stupid stuff. So I'd kind of, like, I knew what D&D was, sort of, you know, but I'd never played it or seen anyone played it or looked at any of the books. So I borrowed the kid's book and kind of flipped through it during that class, and I was like, wow, this is really cool. And I like the whole concept of a role-playing game where it's like kind of like reading a book or watching a movie, only I get to be part of it and I get to participate and make decisions and have a character that I create that grows and changes over time. And I thought that was really cool. And back in those days, you know, video games were very limited. So you definitely couldn't have an experience like you could have in a tabletop RPG on a video game. And I would say that you still can't. Video games have come a long way. I have a PlayStation 4. I play games on my PC, which I built myself and is very, I wouldn't say overpowered. It's a very powerful PC and runs games very well. And it's amazing how far video games have come, but you still today cannot have anything like the experience that you can have in a tabletop RPG in a video game. And the reason is because you're always limited in a video game. You know, the only choices you have, the only things you can do, the only paths you can take are the ones that the game developers have anticipated and put in the game for you. So if you really go outside the box and want to do something they never thought of, you can't do it. And that's the awesome thing about tabletop RPGs, is really the only limit is your imagination, the imagination of the other players, and the imagination of the GM or storyteller or dungeon master, whatever you want to call it. So I was very much enamored with D&D. The first chance I got, it was probably within a week or two of looking at that book in class, I got my own copy of the second edition Player's Handbook, read it cover to cover quite a few times, like probably a lot of people, you know, reading their RPG book, you know, for the first time. I right away started, you know, making a character. I was like, oh, I'm going to make this character and I'm going to find a game and I'm going to play this character. I think I made an elf ranger. So that was my first character, which I never played because, of course, you know, if you actually find a game, you know, they don't want you just usually bring in some character you made on your own. They want you to make a character within their guidelines and everything, and especially second edition D&D. My experience with that game was that every DM had pages of house rules, and every second edition game under every DM was totally different because everybody just hacked that game to pieces to do with what they wanted with it. So I really wanted to play D&D. However, you know, again, a lot of these kids that were playing D&D were people I didn't really know very well. They didn't know me very well. And they already had established groups with players, and they were in the middle of campaigns, and they didn't want to bring in this kid they don't really know who would be, you know, have to make a new character, never played an RPG before. So long story short, I could not find a D&D game to play in. The first RPG I actually played was actually a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game, and one of my friends that I was in band with had gotten this game and wanted to run it, and it was during marching band season, so we every weekend, every Saturday, we would travel to some school to compete, and so we would have these, you know, hours long bus rides to and from the competition. And so we started playing Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles on the bus, and then we played some, you know, on the weekends or after school. Didn't play it a whole lot. I don't even remember what my character was. I think we only played it maybe one or two or three times. But it was enough of a taste of what playing an RPG was really like to see that, yeah, I am going to like this. Not just the idea of it from reading a book, but the actual gameplay experience was something I really enjoyed. So I redoubled my efforts to find a D&D group. A lot of the kids I was in band with, they played D&D, but again, they were, you know, already in established groups, had been playing together for years, and for various reasons, they didn't offer me a spot at their table. So sadly enough, I finally realized that the only way I was ever going to get to play D&D is for me to run D&D. So with the kind of arrogance and just not knowing better of youth, I was like, well, I can be a DM. And I take that back. I did play a little bit of D&D before I started running it. I had a couple friends named Kurt and Jake that they played D&D, and they were, you know, cool enough to let me play with them. And they were playing first edition Advanced Dungeons and Dragons. And so I got to play a little bit of that, but I wasn't able to get together with them as often as I'd like. And, you know, we only played a few times. So my first actual D&D character that I played was a human paladin, which I just think is hilarious because I don't think I've ever since played a paladin, and I don't think I ever would. I don't know, maybe in 5th edition. I might play a paladin in 5th edition, but it would probably still be one of my last choices. But I had a lot of fun with that, but, you know, it wasn't scratching my itch because I got to play maybe once every month or two, and I wanted to be playing all the time. So I was like, I'm going to start my own game. And luckily, you know, my friend Kurt had quite a few years of experience as a DM at that point. So he kind of gave me some tips and some pointers, you know, so I wasn't going in completely blind. I got the Dungeon Master's Guide. I got the Monsters Compendium, which in second edition was this horrible binder with like pages that you'd buy for it. Terrible, terrible idea, but that's what they did. And so I wanted to put a group together. Well, again, I ran into the same problem that every time I went to someone who played D&D and said, hey, you want to play my new D&D game? Well, for one thing, they were already in a D&D game. And for another thing, you know, I'd never played D&D before, like maybe once or twice, and I'd certainly never run it before. So I had a real hard time finding people to play D&D with. Now, you know, my friends Kurt and Jake, they agreed to play, but that was only two people, and I wanted more people than that. And I did find a couple other people to play that Kurt and Jake played with. But I just had these stars in my eyes of I wanted a big group. I wanted lots of people and have this big experience. So I started going to just friends I had who didn't play D&D, had no clue what D&D was, and convinced them to come play in my game. And so my first D&D campaign I ran was in Dragonlance, and I think I had something like 6 or 8 players. And of those, at least half of them had never played D&D before, had never played a role-playing game before. So it worked out really well because, you know, they didn't know what I was or wasn't doing right because they'd never played before. And it was my first time as a dungeon master. And it was also cool because, you know, I had to teach all these people how to play. And so, you know, one of the steps of learning something is to teach it to someone else. So that was a great experience for me. And it really was one of those, as they say, one of those formative experiences in my career of playing role-playing games that I started out with players who'd never played before. And all through high school and all through my college years, I again and again and again would bring people into my games who had never played an RPG before. I found that that was a great way to get new players for my games, partly because, you know, I didn't have to worry about them already being in a game, and partly because I could kind of mold them into good role players. And, you know, at that point, I hadn't really had many experiences with quote unquote bad role players, but I somehow intuitively knew that it was a good thing to be able to kind of take people who'd never played before and kind of show them how to play the way that I wanted to play, which was always very, you know, story focused as opposed to mechanics focused. So I had some experience with the Greyhawk setting when I played first edition. We were, I think, in Greyhawk. But I never ran in Greyhawk. My first campaigns were in Dragonlance. I did play a few sessions, a short campaign by another friend of mine named Tom that ran D&D in Ravenloft, and that was really cool. I had a lot of fun with that. And then at some point, I started moving from Dragonlance into the Forgotten Realms. And I'm not sure exactly why I did that, because I really liked Dragonlance. I had a lot of fun with it. I think part of it was, at that time, Forgotten Realms was really popular, and Dragonlance was starting to feel like yesterday's news. Even though, I mean, they're still today making Dragonlance books and stuff, but it just kind of felt like Forgotten Realms was like the new cool thing. And also, I know that I started reading the Dark Elf books. I read the Dark Elf trilogy by R.A. Salvatore, and I love those books. And I have a feeling that probably had a big part to do with my deciding to run in the Forgotten Realms. I've always liked elves. I've been a big fan of elves ever since I first read The Hobbit. And I really liked how Forgotten Realms handled the elves a lot more than the way that Dragonlance did. Although I liked the Dragonlance elves too. There were some books about the Qualinesti and Kaganesti or something like that. There were a couple trilogies about various elves in Dragonlance that I really liked. But it just seemed like they were more present in Forgotten Realms. They had a lot more going on, and there were more types of elves, which I thought was cool. Another game I played early on was the D6 Star Wars game by West End Games, and that was the second game I ran after D&D. Is I got the Star Wars books, and I ran some Star Wars, and I had a lot of fun with that. One of my most memorable experiences, where I didn't know about a rule, was I was running Star Wars for my friend Jake, and he was flying an X-Wing and proceeded to blow up a Star Destroyer with his X-Wing. It was a really lucky shot. If I remember right, that system has some kind of exploding dice system, and he was force sensitive, so he was using force points and stuff like that. So it was a really lucky roll, but I kind of felt that somehow him taking out a Star Destroyer with some proton torpedoes from an X-Wing was somehow broken. Especially, you know, the thing had shields and everything up. It wasn't like the Death Star where he found some, you know, the exhaust pipe and shot torpedoes up it. And I later found out that that was broken, that shouldn't have happened, because there was this thing called scale where damage and things scaled based on, you know, the size of your vessel. And an X-Wing is a very different scale from a Star Destroyer. So, yeah, that was pretty funny. And I remember still, you know, when that happened, him and I kind of looking at each other like, this seems broken, but okay. Another game I played in the early days was Toon. My friend Tom ran some Toon on a band trip for us, and that was kind of fun. That was the only game I think I've ever played where failing your intelligence check was a good thing. You could actually, you know, defy the laws of physics if you failed your intelligence check, like the old, you know, coyote chasing the roadrunner off the cliff and the coyote keeps going for a while because he doesn't realize that he should fall, that kind of thing. So that was kind of fun. And then the next game I got into was Vampire the Masquerade 2nd Edition, and my friend Kurt got a hold of that game and started running that a little bit, and I loved it. I fell in love with Vampire, and that was like an epiphany for me, because up to that point, I'd run very story-focused games. Like, I was very much into story and role-playing and things like that. But ultimately, up to that point, all my, you know, D&D adventures kind of boiled down to an adventure. Like, you know, you're going to go, you know, defeat this evil dragon, or fight this evil demon, or you're going to go save somebody, you know, from these bandits or whatever. And so all of my adventures were like that. And it was all about this heroic fantasy, you know, go fight some evil and defeat it. And Vampire was the first time I saw real politics in a game, and where we would have whole gaming sessions with no combat at all, but we'd have, you know, social maneuvering and things like that. And vampires, I've always been a fan of vampires. I read like every classical vampire book out there, including some you've probably never heard of unless you're really into vampires like I was. I mean, this was before like Twilight and all that bullshit. So, you know, the only really good vampire books there were to read Bram Stoker's Dracula. And God, I even read Varney the Vampire, which was not very good. But I was excited because it was a whole series of books from like the 1800s or something. But they weren't very good. And all the other classics like Nosferatu and there's another big one that I'm blanking on. So I was into vampires. I thought they were really cool. And I really liked what White Wolf did with the vampire and the different clans and the different disciplines. And so it wasn't long after I played Vampire before I got the books myself and I started running it. And so for a long time through all of high school and pretty much all of college, I was running D&D and Vampire quite a bit. And then sometimes I would run Star Wars. And then another game I got into about that time, maybe a year or two after I got into Vampire, was Changeling the Dreaming. And I was in college by that point. I was a freshman in college, and I just bought it on a whim. I was at a mall in a bookstore. They had RPGs, and, you know, Vampire was really popular back then, and Werewolf was really popular. And they had it was first edition Changeling, they had the book. And I knew I liked Vampire, and I'd heard enough about Werewolf that I didn't think it would really be for me, and I wasn't interested in it. And besides that, I knew people that played Werewolf. But I'd never heard of anybody playing Changeling, and it was like a new thing. So I grabbed it on a whim and read it and really liked it. Started running Changeling, ran that through second edition, and loved Changeling. In fact, it got to the point where I stopped running Vampire altogether and just ran Changeling because I really liked Changeling. So then my games were D&D and Changeling. Some other games that I experienced, I had a run-in with Rollmaster. I made a Rollmaster character, which took longer than some game sessions I played, but I never played it. And honestly, I'm glad I never played it because I can't imagine running or playing that game. It's just a ridiculous level of complexity. Also, about this time when I was running and playing, or not playing, I was running a lot of Changeling, D&D 3rd Edition came out. And at that point, I actually hadn't run much D&D for a while. I'd kind of gotten bored with it in favor of playing Changeling. And I'd kind of I didn't have a campaign going. I hadn't probably run D&D in at least a year or two. And 3rd Edition came out, and my friend Kurt got it. And he was really excited about it, and he put together a campaign, which I played in, and I really liked it. So I got 3rd edition, and just as luck would have it, just about the time I got all the 3rd edition books I wanted, 3.5 came out, which really pissed me off, and I actually resisted getting 3.5 for a while. But again, Kurt got it, and he was like, oh, you know, the changes are totally worth it, you know, blah, 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 blah. So I ended up getting 3.5, selling my 3.0 books on eBay and not getting much money for them at all, because at that point, everybody wanted 3.5. And it was at that point that I ran probably my two longest running campaigns I've ever run. I had a Changeling campaign that went for probably at least a year or two. And then I had a D&D 3rd/3.5 campaign that lasted, I think, close to 3 years. And that one, when I started it, you know, it was 3rd edition, and then we transitioned over to 3.5. We got into epic level a little bit with that. I think the characters were somewhere between 21st and 23rd level when we finally ended that campaign. And that campaign was just a crazy, crazy campaign. I had there is this thing in Forgotten Realms where you could be the chosen of a deity, and basically you got like all these magical abilities, and it was super overpowered and broken, but it was really cool. So my campaign concept was that all of the players were chosen of different deities. And that there were some major things going on in the Forgotten Realms that, you know, were going to make, you know, the Time of Troubles look like nothing. And so the good and neutral deities were kind of banding together And so the players group represented this because they were all characters that worshiped different deities and they were all chosen of that deity. And so it was a ridiculously high-powered campaign even before we got to epic level. It was also a ridiculous campaign in that, once again, I had this idea that bigger was better. And I started out, I had, I think, 12 players for the first session. I think by the third session, it had dwindled down to 8. And then not long after that, it went down to 6. And then it went down to 4. And it was at 4 for, I think, well over a year. And then we went down to 3. And then eventually 2 players. And then it finally ended. But those 2 players were in it the whole time. And their characters were ridiculous. But it was a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun with that campaign. Also, sometime during there, I took a stab at Star Wars D20. Did not like it. And then began a period of my life where I didn't play RPGs for a while. I moved various places in the country quite a few times. And so I got out of touch with the people I'd used to game with. And I always GM'd until I'd say the last year. It was very rare that I ever played in a game. In fact, not counting the last year, I could probably count on one or two hands the number of campaigns I've actually played in. I was always the GM, partly because I just love GMing. And, you know, most people, most players I've encountered, if someone wants to GM, they're happy to let that person GM. And then, you know, if there's ever a time that I didn't want to GM, like no one else really wanted to. And I think part of it was that I was really good about organizing people and like keeping a schedule and getting everybody together. And especially in those early days, I went to a ridiculous amount of effort, you know, getting a hold of everyone, reminding everyone about the game, giving people rides so they'd actually show up. I had a few flakes in my games back then where basically unless you held them by the hand the whole way, they just wouldn't show up to your game. And I don't put up with that shit anymore. But back then I did kind of had some self-respect issues, I think. But anyway, you know, I did a lot to make sure that the group stayed together and that we got together on a regular basis. And I think just a lot of the other people I gamed with, even if they ran campaigns, they weren't that committed and the campaigns would just fizzle because we'd never actually play. So I think that's one reason that I GM'd a lot is I was just good at keeping the games going and always coming up with new stuff to do. And I also wasn't afraid to play different games. So anyway, I did some moving and for, I don't know, somewhere between 2 and 4 years, I didn't play RPGs at all. So finally, I ended up in Seattle and I decided it'd been a long time since I'd played a role-playing game. I was like, well, maybe I'll just play one. You know, it's a huge commitment to run a game. It's a lot of time and energy and effort, but maybe I'll just play in a game. So of course, the first thing I looked into was D&D because it's the game I've played the most. It's the first game I played. It's just, you know, D&D has always been there for me. It's always been one of the games I ran. So I was like, well, maybe I'll find a game. And that's when I found out that there was this new thing called 4th edition D&D. And so I started looking into that. I watched some actual plays on YouTube. I read, you know, reviews of the books and the game. And it was quickly apparent that there was a divide in opinion on 4th edition. It seemed like there were some people that loved it and there were a lot of people that hated it. And then watching the actual plays, I could see why people hated it. I'm like, this doesn't even seem like D&D. This seems like World of Warcraft, the role-playing game to me, you know. I never bought the DMG. I got like a bootleg PDF of the player's guide, and I read through that, and I was just like, this is a mess. I have never been a fan of alignment in D&D. I've always used it, but I've always kind of not liked it. And the alignment in 4th edition actually made the alignment in 2nd edition seem awesome because somehow they took alignment and they fucked it up even more. It was so stupid. But anyway, I'm not going to rant about 4th edition. So I was like, well, this isn't for me. I don't want to play 4th edition. I'd much rather play 3.5. I know it backwards and forwards. So I started, you know, looking into other things and I discovered Pathfinder. And I was like, oh, wow. Well, people say this is basically D&D 3.75. They took things from 3.5 that were, you know, not so great and made them better, but it's still D&D, unlike 4th edition. And I started looking into Pathfinder, watching actual plays and stuff, and liked everything I saw. So I started getting Pathfinder books. I played a little Pathfinder, and I ran some Pathfinder, but quickly I started not liking it so much. And the reason is when I played, or when I ran second edition D&D, I always did, you know, what the kids these days called theater of the mind. We didn't even have a term for it back then, because that was just how you played D&D. We didn't call it theater of the mind. There is no need to differentiate it from grid play, because people didn't do grid play, or at least none of the people I encountered did. So that's how we played D&D. We didn't have miniatures. We didn't have grids. Those were for war games. You know, we were playing a role-playing game. Well, 3rd edition and then 3.5 kind of started bringing the grid more in, because you had 5-foot steps, attacks of opportunity, threatened squares, and your movement was given in squares instead of feet. Well, it was both. But for the first time, I was like, oh, I'll give this a shot. And the reason was, part of it was the DMG came with like a little grid, like a poster grid that you could fold out. So what I did was I just bought a few miniatures. They had this little box of D&D miniatures, and it was like the archetypes, because 3.5 had these archetypes, and Pathfinder has the same thing, where you had the example fighter character and the example wizard character. And so they were the miniatures for those characters. And then I just used coins and chess pieces and just whatever for monsters or whatever else I needed miniatures for. So we had actual miniatures for the PCs, and then everything else was just like some object or whatever. And we just used it for positioning, and I didn't use them all the time, but anytime there's a big battle or whatever, we'd throw out the miniatures and do it. And that was fine. You know, I ran that 3.5 campaign for like 3 years. And, you know, we use miniatures for most of it. And I was never like, oh, these miniatures suck, they're ruining my game. But something happened with Pathfinder, and I'm not even sure exactly what. But, you know, with Pathfinder, and part of it was all these, like, tools and these aids to help you play. Like, you know, these battle mats that you could draw on with wet erase markers and reuse, or if you were running one of their adventures, you could get an actual grid for that adventure, and then they had all these miniatures you could get, and on and on and on and on. And the system was even more focused on grid play, I think, than 3.5 was. And everyone I played Pathfinder with and everyone I ran Pathfinder for, it was like, you had to have a grid. I mean, if you would have tried to run Pathfinder Theater of Mind, people would have just walked out. You know, that's just not how you play Pathfinder. And I was running Pathfinder and realizing as I'm watching the game being played, I'm like, this is becoming a tactical miniatures war game. It's like as soon as we roll initiative, role playing's over. Now we're playing this other game. It was like two games stuck together. It was like the role playing game and a tactical miniatures game. And when you were in combat, you were doing tactical miniatures game. And when you weren't, then you were doing role-playing game. And more, the game was about, you know, min-maxing characters and getting all these abilities and feats and prestige classes from here, there, and everywhere, and all these different supplements to, like, make this perfect character. And people online are like, I want to play a wizard. What's a good build for me? It's like, what the fuck is this? Is this a forum for World of Warcraft, or is this a forum for D&D? Because I can't tell the difference anymore. We're talking about builds, and oh, you're a noob because you didn't get this feat and this feat with your fighter? It's like, are you fucking kidding me? Man, my D&D DM that I started with way back when, if he saw shit like that going on, he'd just rip up your character sheet and be like, make a real character. You know, we're not min-maxing here. So that was really distressing to me, and I really saw what I feel is a degrading of the game in Pathfinder in the way that people were playing Pathfinder, and I didn't like it. And so at that point, you know, I started looking for something else to play. And that's when I found Numenera, which had just finished its Kickstarter. Unfortunately, the game wasn't out yet, so I had quite a few months where I could learn about the game a bit here and there, but I couldn't play it or get it. And I finally got Numenera and read that book, grokked it right away, saw right away that this would not have the problems that Pathfinder has. with the grid play and things like that, and we can get back to story and role-playing and character. And I started running Numenera. And at that point, I see that I am going long, as I tend to do. So I think I will stop this episode there. And what I will do is next week, I will talk about the last year or two of my role-playing history. So this has been up until about 2 years ago, kind of where I'm coming from. And, you know, I haven't had a lot to say about most of these games, but the games I've played in the last year or so, I have more to talk about. And I'm going to start going into kind of what I like and don't like about the various games, the strengths and weaknesses I see of various games, and starting to get into topics transcending individual games. So I will save that for the next episode, and we'll talk about that then. Well, that's going to wrap up episode 2 of Game Master's Journey. If you would like to reach me, you can email me at gamemastersjourney@gmail.com. Please go find me on Google Plus. You can just search for Lex Starwalker. And please join the Game Master's Journey Google Plus community. You can find a link to it on our website at starwalkerstudios.com in the Game Master's Journey show notes. And please follow me on Twitter at Lex Starwalker. Please call the voicemail 626-LEX-GMI-1. And again, please visit our website, starwalkerstudios.com. There you can find the show notes for this show. You can find helpful links, links to our Google Plus community, and you can also find our other podcasts that we put out. So once again, I thank you for joining me on my journey as a game master, and I look forward to coming back next week and talking more about my journey up to this point. So until then, game on.
This has been a Starwalker Studios production, your source for quality gaming and hobby podcasts.
This episode's music provided by Cloudwalker, Renfield, Tranceboy, and Ish. Please see the show notes for more details at starwalkerstudios.com/GameMaster's Journey.